Well, I want to talk to you about spiritual commitment this week. And we're going to look at it from a lot of different angles. But I will tell you, we're living in some strange times. In my lifetime, I don't know that I've ever seen it quite like it is right now. And I think that's probably the case for most generations. But we culturally are moving in some directions that in my personal estimation are not Godward as far as the focus is concerned. And the outcome of that is going to be that our children and our children's children are going to grow up in a world that's not Mayberry. They're not growing up with Andy and Barney and Aunt Bee. And it is a world that is remarkably different from the world that most of us grew up in. We grew up in a culture in this country, most of us who are here, we grew up in a culture that was basically a Judeo-Christian ethic-based country. That's the way it started. That was our experience. We grew up in neighborhoods with people who lived around us who shared with us a common belief in God, a creator. And they shared with us some common values that there are certain things that are understood to be right. Meaning that there's certain vocabulary that you use and there's certain vocabulary you don't use. Everybody understood the distinctions in those two vocabularies. Now, not everyone always followed the rules, but everybody understood what was right and wrong. The thing that has changed today, it's not that people say words today that people years ago didn't say. That's not the point. The thing that has changed today is today, nobody knows that there's a right and a wrong with those words. That's what's changed. We're living in a world where our young people are growing up with some very confusing messages about sexuality. And I'll tell you something, folks, we're going to pay a huge price in our culture for that. A huge price. We're growing up in a world that is all mixed up on the values of life. A culture that is absolutely obsessed with things of a physical and material nature. And a culture that has devalued to a great extent the things that God honors as being most precious. We're living in Babylon of old. And it is becoming more and more clear. How do I turn this on? There it is. Push the button. Is there any other computer? I want to talk to you this morning about Daniel the first chapter as we talk about spiritual commitment. 21st century Christians in a 21st century Babylon. I want you to know that what Babylon of old honored is what's being honored in the culture we have today. And the challenges that Daniel faced are very much the challenges that Christians are looking at today. I told Simon this morning that I had a strong temptation to preach all week long about spiritual values from the book of Daniel. I'm going to discipline myself about that and resist because there's some other things we need to talk about. But I want to tell you, there are lots and lots of lessons that Christians need to learn from the lives of godly men and women of old, like Daniel, who lived in a culture very similar to the one that we're living in. Daniel grew up in some very exciting times. When Daniel was just a boy, I don't know how old he was. He was a teenager, I suspect. Because 70 years later, he's still serving in the court. If he was 15 years old when he was expatriated, he was 85 years old when the Medo-Persian Empire takes over from the Babylonian Empire when they conquer. And he's still serving in the administration. So I don't know if he was 14, 16, 15, 7. I don't know what he was, but he couldn't have been much older than that. Of course, Brother Sharp, he could still be serving on and on and on. Daniel was when he was serving in the court of Darius in chapter 6 when we get there. But in chapter 1, Daniel is living in Jerusalem and he's going to get a free trip to Babylon. He and three of his best friends. They're growing up at some exciting times. They heard some good preachers. They grew up, Isaiah had been preaching 100 years before, so they didn't get to hear Isaiah. But Jeremiah was preaching when these boys were born. I'm talking about Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Daniel was just a boy growing up listening to Jeremiah preach. Now, Jeremiah, he was the preacher everybody complained about. Okay? Jeremiah was a preacher like Simon and me. He had one sermon. He just retitled it and he preached it over and over again. He just, doom, gloom, and destruction. Repent. Judgment is coming. That was his sermon every Saturday. That's what he preached. You remember in Jeremiah chapter 20, Jeremiah said, Lord, they're sick of my preaching. I'm sick of my preaching. I'm not preaching this anymore. And he said, every time I say I'm not going to preach it anymore, Jeremiah 20 verses 7 through 9, every time I say I'm not going to preach it anymore, your word wells up inside of me. It burns like fire within my bones. I cannot but preach it. He has to preach it. Oh, Jeremiah, he was the man in Jerusalem. Then you remember Zephaniah was prophesying against Jerusalem during the same period of time. So, Daniel's growing up, listening to Jeremiah prophesy against the people. He's listening to Zephaniah prophesy against the people. Nahum was prophesying during that period of time. Nahum wasn't letting the Jews have it so much as the Assyrians, who were the world power then. Nineveh didn't fall until 612. Nahum said something that nobody could believe. Nahum said, Nineveh is going to fall. Nobody believed Nineveh could fall. Let me tell you something, folks. Throughout history, every world power convinced itself that it was invincible, that it couldn't fall, that they were at the top and they were there to stay. Lesson for us. 612 BC, Nineveh fell just like Nahum said. Daniel grew up listening to Jeremiah. He was listening to Zephaniah. He was listening to Nahum. He was listening to Habakkuk. You like Habakkuk? I love Habakkuk. Habakkuk was the prophet who was so honest with God. His prayers were honest. May I say to you, we ought to learn to value honesty in prayer. Nahum just opened his heart to God and he told God what he was struggling with, what he was thinking. He told God what he was struggling with. He may as well tell him. God already knew. It's not like you're keeping a secret from God. Nahum said, God, I cannot believe how a holy and righteous God is looking on such sinful, decadent, immoral, and godly people, and you're not doing anything about it. And God said, oh, that's where you missed it, buddy. You don't see me doing anything. I'm working. And even as we speak, the Chaldeans are coming. And then Habakkuk had a huge issue on his hand because first he was worried that God wasn't doing anything. Now God told him what he was doing. Now it's even worse. He wished he didn't know. And finally, he came to a conclusion. Listen to me carefully. He came to a conclusion that all of us need to learn to appreciate. He came to the conclusion that he needed to let God be God and he would just do his part. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Ezekiel was living a boy when Daniel was a boy. You knew that already. Just thought I would remind you of that. Ezekiel was younger than Daniel. Maybe not. Ezekiel was 17 years old. We know how old Ezekiel was. Ezekiel was 17 years old when Daniel and Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah got to take their trip. Now, you know why they got to go and Ezekiel didn't? Because Daniel and Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah, well, they lived on the right side of town. You know what I'm talking about? They drove the right cars. They wore the right clothes. Not only that, it's not just they were born well to the right families. They were beautiful. Okay, handsome. Good looking. And it's not just that they were rich and they were good looking boys, young men, let's say. But also, they were smart. I mean, these are the guys you just hate. They just have everything. They got the car, they got the clothes, they got the good looks, they got the brains. They've got it all. These are the guys that everybody envies. Yeah. Let me tell you something about the people that have it all. It's not always a blessing. You know what it got those boys? Yeah, they had it all. That's why in 606 and 605, when Nebuchadnezzar and the boys came into town, it was like a Marine recruiting trip. They were looking for a few good men. And who did they take? They took the beautiful, rich boys who had it all. And Daniel got his ticket. And he got to go out of town. Now, they were taken to Babylon, you remember. Well, let's read the text. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it. The year is around 606, 605 B.C. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God. I can tell right now there's going to be a problem. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, and he carried them into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz. You need to get acquainted with Ashpenaz. He is a key player. The king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs. Remember that. It's an exclusive club. That he should bring in certain of the children of Israel, even of the seed royal and of the nobles, youths in whom there was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and endued with knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability to stand in the king's palace, and that he should teach them the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily portion of the king's dainties and of the wine which he drank, that they should be nourished 3 years. At the end thereof, they should stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the prince of the eunuchs gave names unto them. Unto Daniel he gave the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's dainties, nor with the wine which the king drank. Okay, let's pause right there. Okay, I want to talk to you about things that you need to remember. If, in fact, you wake up one morning and you're living in Babylon, some things that you need to remember. Number one, you need to remember if you wake up one morning and you turn on Fox News and, man, the economy is just headed south again. Gasoline is approaching $4 a gallon. They can't get the budget passed. They can't get the appropriations bills passed. They can't do anything up there to run this country. It just is just one political battle after another. There's an earthquake, and there's a tsunami. There's a nuclear meltdown. The countries in the Middle East are uprising. It just seems like the whole world is gone crazy and is turning upside down. There's some fundamental things that you need to remember. And the first thing you need to remember is this. God is on His throne. You remember what I said about the prophet Habakkuk, who was so honest when he was praying to God? And his prayer to God was, Lord, I just don't understand how a holy and a righteous God can behold such ungodliness and decadence among the people, and you're not doing one thing about it. And God said, come here, stand up here. I want to tell you what I'm doing. Even as we speak, the Chaldeans are coming. And now, Habakkuk said, Lord, I know I told you I had a problem because you weren't doing anything. Now you told me what you're doing. Now I've got even a worse problem, Lord. I wish I hadn't asked. Lord, I have a worse problem, he said. The Chaldeans, they're worse than we are. And God said, yes, and when I'm finished using them to punish you, they will get their judgment also. And Habakkuk went back to think about that. He could not figure out the mind of God. Who can? My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, saith the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You're not going to figure out God. And Habakkuk, as he's contemplating, his country was in a mess. They were headed down the tubes. And God, as much as told him that, he said, you are in for the spanking of your life. Discipline is coming. And it's coming at the hands of the Chaldeans, who are the most ferocious people on the face of the earth. And Habakkuk went back and he's thinking about all of that and what's coming and about what God is doing. And finally he said, I could not figure all of that out, but one thing I know, Habakkuk 2 and verse 20, God is on His throne. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. Let me tell you something. If you were Mr. and Mrs. Daniel Sr., these would have been some pretty dark days for you. Man, the economy is a mess. The moral situation of the country is just turned upside down. The world that your children are living in is nothing like the world that you grew up in. The political situation on the horizon is getting darker and darker and darker. And now they're saying these Babylonian thugs are on their way and they're at the gates of this city and they're coming in. These Babylonian terrorists who are kidnapping our children and taking them back. And they didn't just take them back. It's not just that. Do you remember 2 Kings 20 and verse 18? It's not just that they kidnapped their boys and they took them to a foreign country and they called them by other names that honored pagan gods. And they made them learn a foreign language and they dressed them in strange clothes. And they forced them into civil service jobs for the most ungodly king ever known in their lifetime. But first the boys went to prep school. They had 3 years of prep school. The most prestigious prep school in the world. It was the prep school for Nebuchadnezzar's court. 3 years they were to be prepared, learning the language, learning to stand in the presence of the king, learning all the protocol, learning all of the arts and the sciences and the wisdom of the Chaldean people. But that's not all. In order to get into prep school, there was a little initiation ceremony that took place. Ashpenaz was the chief of the eunuchs. And those little boys had to go through a little initiation to get started on this journey. If you had been Mr. and Mrs. Daniel, would you have been pleased about that? I'm telling you something. There are times in life when we wake up and we look all around us and we wonder, what in the world is going on? What has happened? Why is life turning upside down? And where is God and what is He doing? And how can He let this happen? And is He paying attention? Does He know? Listen to me. Mr. and Ms. Daniel Sr., God doesn't just know. He's all over this. He's all over that. Have you got your text? Look at Daniel chapter 1. Look at verse number 2. What does it say? It says, while the Lord was taking a nap one Saturday afternoon, the Chaldeans, unbeknownst to God, slipped into Jerusalem. No, that's not what it says. It says, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Do you see that? From the very beginning, the first thing the Holy Spirit tells us about what's going on here is that God's hand is all over this. Drop down to verse 9. Daniel has just said he's not going to eat the king's dainties. He's not going to drink the king's wine. And the text says, now God made Daniel to find kindness and compassion. Drop down to verse 17. And now as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge. I'm telling you, it's not the situation where God's not paying attention, where God went to sleep, where this is all happening behind God's back. He just didn't notice what was going on. God's hand is all over this. God is on His throne. He is God. And He rules. He's going to let Nebuchadnezzar know, Mr. Big Shot, that he is Nebuchadnezzar. He's going to let Mr. Big Shot know that it is the God of heaven who raises up kings, and it is the God of heaven who brings them down. God is on His throne. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in strange times. And I'm not a pessimist. But I'm not Pollyanna about all this. I'm a realist. And I'll tell you the reality that I see that is at play. A reality that the Bible declares that has been affirmed by history throughout the centuries. Do you remember this? Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach unto any people. I'll tell you something. When a people spit in the face of God, Romans chapter 1, when a people refuse to have God in their knowledge, the words of the Apostle Paul, God gave them up to their own reprobate minds. I'll tell you something. If our culture is determined to push God out of the picture, God will not force Himself into anybody's heart. But God will have the last word. And God has not abdicated His throne. And if we in our culture, in this society, if we are going to sit back and we are going to be participants of and part of and among those who are killing unborn children by the hundreds of thousands, if we're going to be among those who are refusing to speak the name of God, if we are going to push God out of the public square and out of any conceptual learning processes of our next generation, we are going to bear the consequences of a people who refuse to have God in their knowledge. And God will either deal with us and discipline us, or He will apologize to hundreds of civilizations before us. But I want to tell you something. When the price of gasoline hits $4 a gallon, go ahead and complain about it. I complained on the way over. When the price of gasoline is going through the... Let me tell you something, though. When I arrived in Italy just a few weeks ago, Johnny Berdini picked me up. We stopped and he was running on fumes in his vehicle. And I said, let's just fill it up. Just go ahead and pull in. I'll fill it up. No, you don't have to do that. I said, no, I'm going to be here for the next 3 weeks. Just go ahead, fill it up. We're going to be using this car a lot. Fill it up. He said, you don't know what you're saying. I said, fill it up. $157, folks. $157. Don't cry too long. Don't say it can't get worse. It can't. But I'm saying, if you wake up and the Middle East is just on fire, and Japan has just washed away, and Washington is just underwater. Oh, we could only hope. No, I'm just kidding. No, if you wake up and things are just horrible, I want you to remember something. But we're Christians. Folks, our citizenship is in heaven. And our God is still on His throne. And I'm not going to despair. I may cry for the temporal pain that I endure. I weep as I pump the gas. But I'm not going to despair. I'm not going to despair. God is on the throne. I'll tell you the second thing that gives me courage. Everybody's subject to Him. You know, Nebuchadnezzar was a long time coming around to understand that at the end of the day, you remember Romans chapter 13? At the end of the day, governments are there to serve the purpose of God. That's what government's all about. Now, they don't always do a good job at that. But that's what it's all about. And one of the things that Nebuchadnezzar did not understand for a long, long time is that God can use whoever He wants to use to get His will done. It doesn't matter if you like Him or not. If God wants to use you to accomplish His will, He can use you, Pharaoh. He can use you, Nebuchadnezzar. He can use you. He doesn't need your permission. He doesn't even need your cooperation. You can choose whatever you want to choose. Boy, this is the thing that makes God, God. You can choose whatever you want to choose. God can use you anyway. You can choose to honor Him and do His will, and God can use you. You can choose to blaspheme Him and to work against Him, and God can use you anyway. Because He's God. And if there is a wicked pagan Babylonian king who is just scorching the earth as he marches across conquering the world, God, if He's ready to discipline His people, can use that wicked pagan king to get His will done. And the king would never know that he's doing the will of God. What an amazing God. The third thing we need to understand is that conflict is inevitable. Folks, it's important that we understand that. You know why? Yeah. God's in control. Our lives are being lived, using the words of the Apostle Paul, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. We are bearers of the name of Christ in a world that seems absolutely determined to destroy Christ. Well, that's interesting. 2,000 years ago, they nailed Him to a cross trying to get rid of Him. Just kind of reminds you of what the preacher said in Ecclesiastes. There's no new thing under the sun. Folks, being a Christian in this coming century, is not going to be the same experience as being a Christian in the past century, not in the United States of America. I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody believed in God. I don't know anybody on my street who didn't believe in God. I don't know anybody on my street who denied that Jesus was the Son of God. I'm not saying they were all New Testament Christians. That's not my point. My point is, I grew up in a culture that was basically a Judeo-Christian ethic culture. And I'm telling you, your children are not growing up in that culture. And neither are your grandchildren. I grew up in a culture where there were certain moral behaviors when I was young that were unspeakable. I mean, it's not just that you didn't do those kind of things. You didn't talk about those kinds of things. And you surely didn't turn on the evening news and hear professional, educated, sophisticated individuals discussing the realities and the details of that kind of behavior. And now, the very behavior that was unspeakable just a few years ago is not only being tolerated, listen to me, it is being endorsed and promoted, and it is being imposed on this culture. And your children and your grandchildren are growing up in that. There was a time when among the people in this country, there was a freedom and an understood right to stand up and to declare the truth of God regarding righteousness and sin. And that there are some things that are right that are always right. And there's no changing that. And there are some things that are wrong, that are an abomination to God. And they are always wrong. And I'll tell you, we will live, some of us, to see the day when there will be legal processes moved against those who publicly speak against certain behaviors. It's coming. I can tell you something that just sounds like it was from another century. Well, I guess it was, actually. In the elementary school where I grew up, we started the day. We started class every day with a devotional. Now, you want to hear something really strange? Every teacher in that school had on her desk a Bible. A big one with big print. And every day was started with a Bible. And a prayer. Yes, a prayer. And we also prayed before we went to the lunchroom. And the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. One nation under God, by the way, is what we said. That's the way we started our day. I think now a teacher would end up not only unemployed, but maybe in court doing something like that in some places. I'm not speaking for Arkansas. I don't know. It's a different world. Conflict is inevitable. Let me tell you something. These boys, they ended up in Babylon. Have you ever been out of your domain in another part of the world, another part of the country? Have you ever been up in the Northeast? You know, have you ever noticed? I try not to say much about this when I'm up there, but they don't know how to talk up there. Is that the first bill? Now that is a shame. Have you ever noticed that sooner or later somebody is going to bother to say to you, you're not from around here, are you? You know what the Chaldeans said to those Hebrew boys? You're not from around here, are you? because they were different. Now, it caused some problems. Actually, they didn't speak the language. They had to learn to speak another language. They didn't dress like they had to dress in a different way. They didn't know really the sciences and the etiquette and the protocol. They had to learn all of that. But then there was a problem because they brought this food in. Hey, they were in the prep school, the king's prep school. They got to eat in the king's dining room. They got to eat the king's dainties, drink the king's wine. This was really something. Except for the Hebrew boys. I mean, they gave them Babylonian names that honored Babylonian deities. Has anybody ever called you a name that wasn't your name that you didn't particularly like? You know, we say sticks and stones may break my... Words do hurt. I mean, you don't like to be called names that aren't your name. They called those boys by names that their mamas didn't give them. But you know what? They could still serve God, even if they called them by different names. They could serve God. They could do what's right. They call them by a different name. But then they brought that food in. And I want to tell you something. That's when we find out for sure those boys know who they are. You can dress them in different clothes. You can put them in a prep school. You can put them through an initiation ceremony that's rather bizarre. You can do a lot of things to them. But when you ask them to do something that's a violation of who they are, that's when they drew the line in the sand. And Daniel said, uh-uh. No, sir. I am not drinking that wine. I am not eating that food. My mama never put that on our table. It is an abomination to the God that we serve. Not doing it. And Ashpenaz, he was in a pickle here. And he explained that, hey, it's, you understand, you're asking permission not to eat the food, but then if the king sees you and you're not good, and then he finds out, I didn't make you eat the food. My head is on the chopping block here. Daniel said, give us 10 days. After 10 days, proof. Guess what happened after 10 days? Guess which boys looked the best? Who were the best looking boys in 10 days? Those four Hebrews. And guess what happened? All the rest of those guys, eating in the king's dining room, drinking the best wine in the country, eating the best food in the country, suddenly they're on vegetables and water. And don't you know Daniel and his buddies were the heroes? I want to tell you something. Jesus said to his disciples, you better remember something. A servant is no better than his Lord. They hated me. The world hated me. The world will hate you too. And the world persecuted me. And the world's going to persecute you too. Because righteous people cannot live in the context of unrighteousness without conflict. And you can be nice, and you can try to get along, and you can grit your teeth and endure a lot of things. But listen to me. If you know who you are, there will come a time when you must draw the line in the sand. And you're going to have to be different. Spiritual commitment in the 21st century. I want every young person here to understand this. I want every parent here to embrace this. Spiritual commitment in the 21st century is going to demand that we understand and appreciate the value of being different. Thank you very much for your attention.